A National Assembly of the Catholic Church met in Athlone on Saturday in what was described by participants as challenging, heartening, and the once in 2,000 year opportunity to influence Vatican teaching. Attended by 160 delegates representing the Church's 26 dioceses in Ireland, as well as religious congregations and various lay groupings, it's part of a worldwide process in the Church in preparation for a synod at the Vatican in October of next year. Indeed, among the people present was Ursula Halligan of the We Are Church Ireland group, and she's quoted as saying, "To be honest, I was dreading coming here because I felt so excluded from my church, but I was really heartened by the presentation of the feedback." Father Roy Donovan is spokesperson with the Association of Catholic Priests, who themselves on occasion have felt that there isn't great inclusivity involved in involving priests in decision-making amongst the church. I wonder if he would share Ursula Hannigan's view about it being heartened by the presentation and the feedback. Father Donovan, good morning to you, and thanks for joining us this morning on Kildare Today. Well, would you share Ursula Halligan's view?
Absolutely. From the feedback from, we had two of our guys there representing us at that meeting, and the feedback from them is equally heartening. And it's once in a 2,000-year period where I suppose everybody's in the same room, and it was organised so professionally, created a very safe place for people to be honest, and I think Ursula refers to it as was very raw at times, so it was very honest, and it seems a great start, and a great, I suppose, example of the synod pathway as listening to one another, being able to speak your mind, and all the issues that are coming up from the 26 dioceses are similar. The one on women is extraordinary. 25 out of 26 dioceses want women to be ordained in governance, in decision-making, equal with men.
And have you, your association, whereby the vast majority of priests are now approaching retirement, many priests are, I use the word forced advisedly, compelled maybe might be a better word, to continue in service long after retirement because of the lack of replacements. But regarding the treatment of women in the church, which was discussed at the synod, is it likely to fall on deaf ears once it goes to the very conservative Vatican?
I would hope not. I would hope, because it's coming so strongly, not only from Ireland, but I imagine it's going to come from many other countries as well. And I think it's dawning on the top of the church. Francis says that he no longer wants a pyramid church, he wants a church of the circle. That's all very encouraging.
Coming across you, Father Donovan, you are aware, of course, that there is a double standard in the church in regards to, ordaining women, or indeed ordaining married men, because we know what happens when people come from the Church of Ireland. When men are widowed, yeah, they can be ordained. Yeah. But in particular, I'm referencing the situation in South America, whereby different standards seem to apply. And again, I just wonder that, yes, undoubtedly the 26 dioceses reflect what people want, but that's what people want maybe in a Western society that is loosening the shackles all the time. It's not necessarily what an institutionalized church wants, which is basically shackled by a Pope who might not be as transformative as we might have hoped and expected, and particularly by a curia of cardinals who would be extremely conservative. Sorry now for the long question, but just putting that view to you.
Yes, and the head of the German Bishops' Conference met Pope Francis recently, and he came back and he said there's going to be no changes in the church in the next 5 years. So Pope Francis is not going to bring about these big changes. They're probably going to come after 5 years' time, which is very slow and very late. And I suppose you could say the Asian churches and African churches, they're going to face the same thing that we're facing here in the West. And you know, the same thing is happening all over the church, except it's happening in the West at a faster rate.
And it's happening in, it has happened already in South America. And the reality for the church, Father Donovan, is unless the church moves on this, the ordination of women in particular, the church is likely to have a handful of priests only in this country and in other countries. In other words, the church will not be able to deliver the services that it traditionally delivers, in particular the Mass and sacraments.
Correct. And the way the church is operating at the moment, it's getting rid of all priests, really, you could say. And maybe the Holy Spirit is at work there, because priesthood is a male construct. Women have never had an input into priesthood, and many women, if they were to be ordained now, and deaconesses, they'd be coming into a male-dominant structure. So all of that needs the input of women, and the new type of ministries. It would have to be a totally new type of priesthood or ministry.
A new and if I would, Father Donovan, even go on, a new type of church. Patsy McGarry, I'm sure you're aware, Patsy's the religion correspondent with the Irish Times. He wrote last week, Ireland's Catholics have had enough. They want change and they want it now. Were it left to them, women would be ordained, priests could marry, and LGBTI plus people, as well as divorced, remarried, cohabiting couples and single mothers, would be embraced with an enthusiasm that would make the prodigal son blush. Now, well put, he said. But, you know, the cynic in me will say, with the greatest of respect, that's, you say, maybe in 5 years' time. But one would wonder, are these synods just a cosmetic exercise to quieten the flock, to make them think they're having a say?
No, I think it's different this time. And the feedback from Brendan Hove and Tony Flannery, who were at this meeting in Athlone, is there's a momentum now being generated. And it looks like the gap between the institutional church and the everyday life of people now is so big that if the institutional church doesn't change, it's lost forever.
But what
there's no choice now.
But there is a considerable cohort within the church as well that who would resist that kind of change, not just in Ireland, but traditionally around the world. As Patsy McGarry went on to write, in the background were those minority traditional Irish Catholics, sullen as the older brother in that parable of the prodigal son. He, like them, had never left home, and all was fine until these spendthrifts decided they might return, having squandered their birthright in the flesh pots of Egypt, or current equivalent. Making the point that there is going to be a significant pushback by the traditional element within the church.
Yes, and that's there all the time. The thing is that in Athlone, some of them were there at that meeting, and from what I gather, because it was such a safe place was created for profound listening to each other, that doesn't seem to have become an issue, that people listened with respect to each other. And I think this whole new way of Pope Francis, of a synodal church, of people walking together, listening together, that's creating a momentum, even if the minority are going to resist it, that if it's done in a professional way, those ways forward can be found.
Yeah, and just ask you, Father Donovan, and I mean, even if these proposed reforms that have come from the 26 dioceses and the vast majority of people, I mean, I was only talking to somebody at the weekend who said to me, the church is finished, you know, you look at the profile of a congregation in church, if you could call it a congregation anymore, the small numbers, it's very much in the older cohort of people, not alone the priests. I wonder, as one Galway participant is quoted as saying, that all of this has come 40 years too late. Is this a case of closing the stable door, if you don't mind the analogy, when the horse has already gone bolted off into the sunset?
Yes, it's symbolic that they held a prayer service in Clonmacnoise. Clonmacnoise marked the end of an era, the end of the monastery kind of model of church. So maybe meeting in Athlone and Clonmacnoise is marking the end of the Church of Parishes, as we know it. There's going to have to be a totally new paradigm or model, and that this is the end of the Church as we know it, of a paradigm that we've been operating out of, which has been mostly parish.
And that paradigm has been patriarchal. And, it's one thing to say we want the ordination of women, we want the ordination of married men, we want the ordination of people irrespective of their gender as to how they identify gender-wise. But you're asking those things of a church that is still patriarchal, that is controlled and run by men, and in particular a very powerful subset of men.
Yes. And but the church seems to be getting rid of all the priests. So it's on the way out, that patriarchal model.
People might say, could they get rid of the cardinals first, and then there might be a greater chance of reform at parish level?
There's another problem. That is, you say 40 years too late. It could be 40 years too late. I'll tell you why. Because the only reason priests are having this conversation with people now is because we're in a minority and we're on the way out. If we had enough of priests, we wouldn't be doing this with people. We wouldn't be having this sinful way. People would be still in the lower end of the pyramids. And now the problem is that most people don't want to take ownership of the church because they've been excluded for so long. And how are you going to get enough people to work this new model or to find this new way forward? Like a lot of the people in Athlone, okay, there was a cross-section of people, but generally the people who have been consulted are mostly in the older category.
Yes, so, and on that point, basically, going back to, if I might just wear the cynical hat for the moment, just by way of questioning, that the vast majority of those being consulted are those who are most likely to, you know, retain the status quo anyway. I mean, the bottom line here is, there will be no church unless reality is grasped.
Correct, absolutely. And yes, that's what I'm hearing from the feedback from our two guys that were there in that loan was that, and Ursula is confirming the same thing, that people are being pushed into an uncomfortable zone, rawness and challenging. That seems to me an indication that reality is being faced.
And one concerning point that maybe is worth raising, the press were not allowed to attend.
Yes.
What does that say?
I'm not sure the reasoning behind that.
Well, the reasoning was, the explanation offered was to facilitate a dialogue which can be as open as possible. But if you want to facilitate a very open dialogue, surely you don't want to just share it with people who are selected to attend a conference of this nature. You want to share it, the entire discussion, with the entire general public of Catholicism in this country, because ultimately they're the ones who are being impacted by it.
Yes, and because the media have been excluded, it hasn't got much media attention. And the whole synod, what happened in that loan, I think Ursula did say it was her hope that she expressed the sentiment that it's a pity that all the people of Ireland couldn't hear and what went on in Athlone. You're right there. So maybe if the media were allowed, more people could have been brought into this into the future journey.
Bishop of Limerick, Brendan Leahy, who I think is a Kildare man, or certainly has Kildare links, said, "I think we're in a major moment. Pope Francis often said it's not just an era of transformation, it's the transformation of the era. And I think we can recognise that," is quoted Bishop Lee. I mean, even if Pope Francis wants to make these changes, the Pope is essentially just a figurehead. Ultimately, he's at the behest of his curia of cardinals, particular, if we might call them, the cabinet, those half dozen or so that wield the greatest influence around the Pope. But I suppose, to re-echo what we just said, Father Donovan, if this message is not taken on board, reality will overtake whatever conservative views are there anyway.
Yes, It will, and it will be the end of the church totally. And it would be a pity if it's a total end, because we've had over 1,500 years of the practice of Christianity here in Ireland. There's a lot of good stuff there in that. And it would be a pity if that came to a total end.
Yeah. Just as
wiped out.
Just as an aside, I wonder, for example, how far away we might be if this current resistance continues, as the church begins to wane, as parishes cannot deliver the services that people want, like the last rites, the yes. sacraments, the mass. I wonder, could we be heading towards a schism or a schism, whichever way you pronounce that, whereby individual parishes in the future might take things into their own hand, and we could have breakaway segments within the church. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see how the debate goes. I thought we would reflect it with you this morning. Spokesperson with the Association of Catholic Priests, Father Roy Donovan. Thanks for your time this morning, Roy.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. In regards to our church discussion, a listener says it seems the church is only prepared to listen now when the numbers of priests is so low. I would question whether women priests of the future would be at the bottom of the priestly pile. As a woman, would I want to be included now? No, I would not, says that listener. Well, I don't know. I think many women would relish the opportunity of being ordained into the church. But the one thing, the basic fundamental thing is, if the church doesn't concede these demands, which, by the way, ordination of priests as men only is a man-made law. It's not God's law. And there are many other so-called laws in the Catholic Church that are man-made laws, not God's law. So there is no reason that they not be changed, particularly if the church is facing, ultimately, disappearing or imploding, which it will, because there won't be priests. In many parishes at the moment, there aren't enough priests to deliver the services with priests, which parishes sharing priests and so on. Anyway, Owen.
Yeah, we're going to go to the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District meeting now of a few days ago, and Fine Gael Councillor Peggy O'Dwyer is on the line. Good morning, Peggy, and we're going to take a look at the motions that you brought forward to that meeting. And first of all, you wanted the council to delay the taken in charge process of the Newbridge Business Park. That's the link road until mitigating measures are installed by present owners to prevent encampments occurring. What are these mitigating measures that you're talking about, Peggy?
That we would know as the little, I suppose, little roundabout. We've had two major encampments there over the last few months. And when the encampments go, we're left with rubbish and damage to the environment. It's not Kildare County Council's job to do that. It's a privately owned property. So for me, before this Section 11 of the Roads Act, which is really where an application is made to Kildare County Council to take it in charge, we just need to try and get some measures put in to reduce the risk of the encampment. It would be the timber bollards that are we see down there in Naas through Chadwick, but Kildare County Council are reluctant to kind of even suggest that, because I gather there's a suggestion that they want them to be removed from that road. But unless something is put in, Kildare County Council are going to end up with substantial bills going forward. Because the encampments will continue. So
okay.
I just want them to try and make every effort to reduce the encampments.
Now, we spoke about this meeting, obviously, regarding Beelan Woods and the need for the pedestrian link between the linear park and the new estate. You had a motion about this, Peggy.
Yes, a number of councillors had, and we've discussed it before on. So it's really about the reinstatement of what was the original plan to introduce that path to connect the linear park to Beelan Woods. So we hope to get a positive resolution from that.
You also asked the council to confirm if St. Conlett's Cemetery in Newbridge Car Park would be sufficient in size to facilitate the number of cars which need parking facilities to attend funerals following the upgrade.
Yes, and at the moment St. Conlett's Cemetery has getting some improvements in relation to paths. We're going to put in new seating and some painting work. So we've lost 10 spaces. There's 1.2 metres of the road frontage has been removed for the realignment of the road, and Glenveagh are doing work there. So losing 10 spaces brings us back down to 35, 36 Newbridge is a big community, so it isn't until all the realignment is done, the car parking spaces are going in, and we just review it. My own view was that this is not going to be sufficient, and we just need to see how we can plan going forward to try and get in extra parking someplace within that area.
Okay, and finally then, Peggy, you wanted to get an update on an approximate date for when the changing places facilities are being installed in Kay Leisure in Newbridge for the use by the public and when they'll be completed. We spoke to Aisling McNiff as she cares for her special needs child, Jack. She's also a spokesperson for Changing Places Ireland as well. It's a much needed facility around the country and around the county. What response did you get there?
Oh, and we're delighted. This is the first one that's going to go in Kildare South, and it was very much pushed forward through the CCAN group, which is the umbrella group for the access group. So as you explained, it's the largest space for bathroom facilities for people with disabilities, both children and adults, where you have high changing fences. So Kildare one is going to a snagging list at the minute, and we hope to have it opened up and running in July, and that information will go out through social media and apps. There's also one going into Oris as well, and I gather the opening of that one is going to be on the 1st of July. Two very positive moves.
Great stuff. On that good news, that is Fine Gael councillor on the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District, Peggy O'Dwyer.
Now we move to Naas Municipal District. Councillor Carmel Kelly of Fianna Fáil is on the line. Good morning, Carmel, and we're going to begin this morning with you asking the council for confirmation if they are considering the installation of traffic counters. That's at the Millicent Salins to Clane Road Junction.
Good morning, Ciara. And since the Salins bypass has opened, it would seem that the traffic movements at that junction, that would be sort of, for anybody who doesn't know it, when you leave Salins after the new roundabout now, it would be sort of Bowdenstown, Millicent Junction. So I think a lot of traffic may be trying to move past and take shortcuts, as we know they all try to do. And I've been contacted by a lot of residents on that road who said that the traffic has increased to unsustainable and actually dangerous levels at that junction. And I have looked at it myself. I've parked up there and looked at it, and the amount of trucks, the level of traffic, trying to get out of that junction has become problematic. So I've asked... I was hoping that they would tell me that they would put in traffic counters to assess it, because it's all very well, as you know, people saying, you know, yeah, I saw a lot of traffic there, but we need specifics. If we're going to upgrade that junction, we're going to need specifics. So, quite rightly, Kildare County Council said they'd prefer to wait till September, till the schools are back.
Okay.
And assess it at full flow. So I ask that to be kept on the progress report, even as a reminder to myself that in September that I will say again, guys, can we install that traffic counter now?
Okay, we will catch up with you then on that. Now, you've also asked for the rollout of the provision of 4 extra bins along the canal in Salins. As people can imagine, this time of year, people out and about more, meaning there probably is more rubbish in the summertime months.
Yeah, that was a very successful project last year. 4 extra large wheelie bins on the canal in Salins, and it really worked. And I was delighted to see that they have already been installed. There were some issues with collection, I think, for a week or two, but it has all been sorted. And can I thank County Council? As I said, it did work last year, and it wasn't just, I think, Salins. They rolled it out in the high volume.
Yeah, no, there was issues across the county. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Finally, Carmel, sorry, we're a bit stuck for time. This morning, just to ask you about you asking if the tender for the removal of trees in Bowdenstown graveyard had been issued by the council.
Yes, and again, I was very happy with the reply. The tenders have been issued on that, but it's the start of the process. What we need to understand is Bowdenstown is a national monument. To the people of Salins, it's our local graveyard, and we would like our loved ones. I've been on this programme several times about this, but because it's a national monument, Kildare County Council alone can't make the decision to take out some of those trees along the wall that will allow for extra spaces. We have to go to the department and we have to go to the OPW. But thankfully, as soon as the tender came back, contacted James Lawless, our local TD. He's already been on to the minister, and the minister said he will expedite the request as soon as it lands on his desk, and then it'll be up to the OPW. So very hopeful that as soon as we're allowed to cut hedgerows and trees again come the middle, end of September, that we will be able to take some of those trees out, which will give us more space.
That's what the council has said. Works will proceed as soon as the bird nesting season does close, but that's subject to departmental approval. Thank you so much, Councillor Carmel Kelly of Fianna Fáil and NACE MD. Take care.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare KFM.
Pouring rain, I am the voice of your hunger and pain. I am the voice that always is calling you. I am the voice, I will rule it all. I am the voice in the fields when the summer's gone, the dance of the leaves when the autumn winds blow. Now do I sleep through it all the cold winter long? I am the force that in springtime will grow.
And indeed, what a beautiful voice she has. Eimear Quinn, good morning to you.
Good morning, Clem.
And thank you for joining us. It's a long, long way from Clare to here. Well, it's a long, long way to 1996, was it, in Oslo?
It was 1996. Well done. Yeah, that's it, in Oslo. In Oslo, I know, listen, the less we say about it, the better, probably, in some ways, that we haven't won it since. But, you know, it's nice to still hold the crown at the same time and to remember the glory days.
Yeah, while it brought you to prominence, Eimear, just give us a little bit of background before you arrived at Eurovision. Of course, you were an accomplished, would I describe you, a singer anyway? I wouldn't use the word vocalist, because you tended to traverse different genre between the traditional and the classical, maybe.
Yes, that is true. Actually, I was singing classical voice. I was studying for a degree in music at Maynooth at the time, but I had the wonderful pleasure of also working with, at that same time, the choir Anuna. They're a fantastic choir, and it was actually whilst I was working with Anuna, singing at a concert for them in St. Patrick's Cathedral in Dublin, that Brendan Graham, who wrote the song The Voice, he was there in the audience, and he heard me sing another song that he wrote, actually, that the choir performed, and he approached me afterwards about singing his song in the National Song Contest, and that's how it happened, you know. And I always very, very mindful of saying to my girls, you know, that these chance things can happen, these little miracles in life where you just, these opportunities are presented to you. You know, you should always dream and follow your dreams and actually really believe in them and hope that they can come true, you know.
And indeed, I mean, it launched you onto a much, much wider European-wide audience. I mean, many Eurovision winners have come and they've gone and maybe disappeared off the radar. How have you been performance-wise since?
It's been 26 years, I suppose, of a very, very privileged career, to be honest. I've just had such a joy of being able to perform for the great and the good, you know, for Queen Elizabeth and Prince Charles across the pond, and, you know, from Michael D. Higgins and his amazing night in the Albert Hall when the Irish took over London, and when he went on his state visit, and all around the world, in Australia, of course, America and Europe, and just just a really, really fortunate career no matter how taxing or challenging any of it is, it never feels like hard work, because I am my most joyful when I'm standing on a stage sharing music with people.
Indeed. Now, you are, if you don't mind me you sharing the stage for the moment with this, as in this part of the conversation, you're married, I understand, to a well-known figure in RTE as well.
Well, he's formerly of RTE. He's well known, actually, now, I suppose.
He is known, current, the former Director General of RTE.
Former Director General of RTE. And since being Director General of RTE, he's moved onto more of an international stage himself, where now he runs an organisation called the European Broadcasting Union, based in Geneva. So he has Yeah, he's stretched the net far wider. He now works, that's the company that actually organises and produces Eurovision. So he works with all of the public service media broadcasters across Europe. It's a very challenging but very satisfying job
well,
for
let's
him.
Well, let's talk about you, because I've just mentioned that by way of a little bit of the bio.
The only reason I was extolling a little is because it means temporarily I'm based with him here in Geneva.
Of course.
And I'm in Geneva at the moment as I'm talking to you, but I'll be home in Ireland tomorrow. So this is my routine, that I go back and forth for concerts, and it's very enjoyable.
You mentioned Anuna at the outset, and you also mentioned being a graduate of Maynooth up the road.
That's right, yeah, my strong Kildare roots, which I'm very proud of and very glad for, and I only ever had an incredibly positive experience in Maynooth and the university and the lecturers, and Professor Gillen was my professor of music. Everybody has always been, they took great care of me.
They did, because you were even involved in promoting the studying of music at NUI Maynooth.
That's right. Whenever I went back, I deferred my final year ultimately because of Eurovision. And when I went back for my final year, the university very, very kindly welcomed me at the 11th hour to come back for that particular academic year and asked me if I'd be involved in raising the profile of the music department, which I was only too delighted to do.
Yeah, you mentioned Queen Elizabeth, and you performed for her on her state visit to Ireland in 2011. People need to remember that. You were in the Albert Hall in 2014. You were still performing The Voice even in Amsterdam in 2019 or thereabouts. Do you get fed up? You often hear singers who've had, you know, an iconic song that's most associated with them. Do you get fed up of singing it? Does it become stale?
Never, ever. I sang it last week with the 47-piece orchestra in the National Concert Hall, and we celebrated the frontline workers and the COVID care concerts, a big gala concert. And it's such a thrill. Every single time I sing it, it's like for the first time. It's just this, it's a kind of a song that it has an energy and a life about it that I never, ever, ever have once sung that song where it felt like a chore. It energizes me and gives me just, I basically just want to keep on singing it as soon as I sing it. You know, I love it.
And you've had a number of albums. I actually have two in my collection, because I also present a trad music program here and I've had a lifelong interest in trad music, being a banner man.
Wonderful.
Anyway, your most recent album was Eru, obviously a real Celtic theme around that title.
Yes, and that was actually with the National Concert Orchestra. I recorded that, and it came out during the pandemic. And Brendan Graham, who wrote the song The Voice, he and I collaborated on a good number of songs for that release. And we re-recorded The Voice with the orchestra, and I sang some of his beautiful, he has a beautiful Irish language song called Crooked na Bush, the very sad song, but beautiful song that we performed with a gorgeous arrangement by the Belfast composer Neil Martin. And then we wrote some lovely songs together, a lovely song called The Watchman, which was played a lot during the pandemic. Quite an uplifting song about provenance and about a force for good taking care of us.
And now you're coming among us on Wednesday evening, because in the beautiful St. Bridget's Cathedral in Kildare Town, lovely historic setting, doors open at 7:30. Tickets available, by the way, either on Eventbrite or at the Kildare Heritage Centre in the square in Kildare Town, at £25 a ticket, as part of the Derby Festival, which is going on until next weekend when the jockeys and the horses take over. And that, looking forward to that performance in that beautiful church setting on Wednesday night.
Oh, without a doubt. I'm looking forward, firstly, to be in Kildare for the Derby Festival in the first instance, because isn't it wonderful that we can all get out and celebrate life again? That's the first thing. And then the second thing is to be back in St. Bridget's. I mean, it's a space that is sacred for anyone who steps through the doors, but particularly for Irish women, I think, who connect so much with the divine that is Bridget, and all of her wonderful energy can feel that working its way around the room and spreading its blessings to us all. You know, it'll be such a joy to stand there and fill the space with music. I feel honoured to be invited.
I have no doubt, Hemer, it will be a sellout. We've been giving away tickets for the last couple of days, and strong demand, I know, from listeners to get hold of a pair of tickets. What I'm going to do is tomorrow I will give away the final two pairs of tickets tomorrow on the programme to the concert. People can tune in for that. But meanwhile, Eimear Quinn, lovely to talk to you this morning, Eimear. And can we say, if you'll understand, of course you'll understand what I'm saying, break a leg on Wednesday evening. I'm not sure if that's the appropriate remark in a musical setting,
no,
as distinct from a theatre setting.
And listen, I just wanted to say also a huge thanks to Sive, a local musician, Kildare woman, who's going to also join us. So I'm very much looking forward to hearing her voice too and being surrounded by the good people of Kildare. And thank you for all for welcoming me.
Not at all. It should be a great, great evening. Eimear Connolly, Eimear, I get these odd mental moments. Eimear Quinn, of course, of The Voice. Eurovision winner back in 1995 or 6, but that's history. Still extremely active internationally, as we have chronicled there throughout the chat. And coming your way to the Kildare Heritage Centre on Wednesday evening in St. Bridget's Church. What a lovely setting. What a great evening. Lovely to talk to you, Eimear. Thanks very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you for your time this morning. Take care.
Take care to you too. That's Eimear Quinn, who spends most of her time now between Ireland and indeed Switzerland. This is Tommy Callaghan, who spends most of his time around Nice. Good morning, Tommy.
Good morning, Sam.
Now, Tommy, the action focused on the club scene this weekend, and if we look at some of the results in Division 1, Clane beat Castledermot 2-14 to 1-7. Sarsfields had a 2-point win over Aheens and now topped the table 1-12 to 1-10. Moorfield edged out Eadstown 2-9 to 13 points. Confey, a big win over Carbery by 4-10 to 1-14. Selbridge, an equally big win over Larry's, who are in a bit of trouble at the bottom. They're 3-24 to 1-4, and a tie, beaten by Nace convincingly, 2-15 to 9 points, which, Tommy, leaves the table looking with Sarsfields on top on 16 points, followed by Nace, who have a game in hand, a tie, and Raheens. What do you make of that Division 1 table?
Yeah, it looks very much like, Ken, that could be the four that can qualify for the semi-finals, even though Confey are still in there with a squeak because they have a game in hand. That game is on Wednesday night coming against Nace, and it's in Nace. And Confey, you have to give full credit to Confey this year. They had a very poor season last year, and they're right up there in fifth spot at the minute with 11 points from 9 games.
It's Sarsfield 16, Nace with a game in hand 15, Athy 15, Raheens have 13, Confey and Clane have 11 points each, but Confey have that game in hand as well, Tommy. Moorfield also on a level 11. But at the other end of the table, an interesting situation. Eadstown are obviously gone, and now the question is, will it be Larry's, who are on 5 points, or Castledermot, who are on 6 points, will join them? All will depend on the last game.
It will, of course. And Carbery, don't forget, are only on 6 as well. So they're in that mix as well.
They are, yeah.
Carbery, the Carbery take on Eadstown in their last game. So you'd have to give Carbery the nod there, which will leave Castledermot and Lawrence probably fighting it out for the last relegation position. Castledermot, I think, have a home match. You have to say that the team that looked to be in trouble would be Lawrence.
Yeah.
Lawrence's played Confey in their last match. Now it is in Lawrence's, but a lot will probably depend on how Confey get on with Nace on Wednesday night. These last round of fixtures, Clem, are not on until Tuesday, tomorrow night week. They're all time for Tuesday, tomorrow night week, and all throw in at the same time,
right,
at 8 o'clock.
Let's go to Division 2, Tommy. We'll focus on the tables at this stage. Leixlip topped the table on 18 points from Johnstone Bridge 16, Kilcock 13, Kilcullen 12, and Maynooth 12. That's top. The top section. In the bottom section, it's Clarenco on 10, Round Towers 10, 2 Mile House 10, Monastrevin 9, Ballymore Eustace obviously gone to Division 3.
Yeah, again, Leixlip and Johnstone Bridge, it's the top two teams here are promoted. They play league final, but the top two are automatically promoted. So that's Leixlip and Johnstone Bridge heading for Division 1. On the bottom half, as you say yourself there, Clem, Ballymore will be gone. Now, then there's four teams then left in that bottom section of Division 2. On top of the table with 11, after 11 games, is Cajarico with 10 points. Yeah. Round Towers, also with 11 games, have 10. Tomei House, after 12 games, have 10. And Monasterevin, after 12 games, have 9. So there's a lot to play for in that bottom section still.
All right, OK, Tommy, moving on to Division 3. Top section there shows Salins, 19 points. They're up in Division 2 for next season. Alamwood of 16 would be favourites to join them, I think. St Kevin's, 14. Kill on 10. Rathangan on 10. And then the bottom four, or the bottom five there, are Ballyteague and Ellistown, both 11. Carra have a game in hand. They're on 9. Nurney and Suncroft, are both of those gone, Tommy?
They're not gone yet, Clem, but they're looking like they will go, but they're not gone yet.
All right.
They're all in 11 games, they've all played 11 games, so you have to say that Nurney and Suncroft would be the favourites to go down to Division 4.
Right, in Division 4, Tommy, interesting situation there, because Grange are the only unbeaten team across the four divisions. And what an achievement that is. 21 points after 11 games, that's 10 wins and 1 draw. From Strachan on 20, Robertstown 17, Milltown 16. Bottom of the table, well, it doesn't matter much here, so we'll focus on the top. Grange Nolven and Strachan, both of those would be promoted.
Both of them are promoted. In fairness, a great achievement by Grange to go through the 11 games undefeated. And in fairness to Strachan, they've won one and only lost one as well. So, I mean, and they were, what, the 3 points? Strachan had 3 points and Grange had 4 points spare over third place Robertstown, Milltown and further point back. So, well done to Grange. Up to Division 3 along with Strachan,
yeah.
And they have something to look forward to next year, playing in Division 3 football in the Senior League.